edition of the Front Page here on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Chuck Moraz. Today we'll be talking about football, America's most popular game. And new book is out. It's called Football Nation, 400 Years of America's Game, from the Library of Congress. Susan Rayburn is the author. And Susan, thanks so much for joining us on Front Page.
Good to be here, Chuck.
Well, this book is a lot of fun to read. Not only a good read, but also a great book to look at because there's just so many wonderful pictures in it.
We had a great deal of fun researching the library's collections for images. The library has more than 150 million items in its collections. That is not an exaggeration. That's actually what it is. And unfortunately, those are not all images about football. But of that collection, there was a lot of material that hadn't been published before or that had been rarely seen. And so it really was a wonderful opportunity to go through the nation's holdings and find things that we could put in the book to tell the story of football.
The one thing that caught my eye was just the cover itself. It says 400 years of America's game. And when people think about football, and I would have to throw myself in with this too as well, I think of football as a game that started maybe around the turn of the 20th century.
Well, and that's absolutely the way most of us think. What I wanted to do with the book was take the word football and see how far back we could go in our history. And where I landed was in Jamestown in the early 17th century. The settlers and English colonists, when they arrived, there were some of them who actually took note of what they saw the Indians playing, and the word that they used to describe it was football. And, of course, the English settlers were used to playing a very wild, mob-like game of football back in England. Few rules, very bloody, very, very dangerous sport. And one of the things they noticed with the Indians was that there seemed to be a great deal more sportsmanship, and it seemed to be a more orderly-looking game, but they recognized the similarities, and they called it football. So then I just decided, well, let's start there, and we'll work our way up to present time.
Well, and things slowly developed with this game. It's evolved a great deal over that period of time, hasn't it?
Oh, the changes have been phenomenal, and it really did take its time, as you say. It's not until the late 19th century that you really start to have distinctions with soccer and rugby and American football, because the word football was used to describe all kinds of games. You could say football, we're going to go play football, and it might be a kind of game that looked a little different from what you were used to.
And this was a game that, when we talk about it from the standpoint of maybe catching America's eye around the turning point of the 20th century, I mean, it was a very brutal game at that time. I mean, you had people who actually were killed in these games.
Yes, you did. And there were a couple of seasons at the beginning of the 20th century where 15, 20 players a year might be killed playing football. Most of them were high school players, but there were some college players. And it wasn't until 1905, really, when the Chicago Press began publicizing and listing all of these deaths that were occurring around the country, that it became a crisis. And that's what got the interest of President Theodore Roosevelt to have a meeting with the major football powers, which at that time were Harvard, Princeton, and Yale. And coming out of that meeting was the birth of the NCAA, and their purpose was to implement some changes to make the game safer. And that didn't necessarily happen. There were still player deaths that occurred in the following seasons, but at least an effort was being made to combat the problem. And so the violence has always been a part of American football. That's never changed.
If I remember correctly, at one point, football was almost outlawed.
Well, and it was at that time, you're right, in 1905, where a lot of college presidents were calling to end the game. There were the clergy was not happy about it. There were an awful lot of calls from the pulpit to ban the game. But there were a couple of things that the game had going in its favor at the time. Not only was it, you know, still popular despite the violence, football was bringing in the money that supported the other sports in those athletic departments in those early years. And it's a similar situation to what we have today, how football usually carries other sports. And there was the realization that, you know, this brought in a lot of donor money. This brought in a lot of interest from the alums. And so the effort was made then, we have to find a way to make this game a little safer because there's too much that we have invested in it, and it's worth too much to us.
In looking at this book, Susan, the first thing that caught me was, you know, you have to be a real football fan to put something like this together, and that's what I'm assuming about you, right? Am I correct?
You are very correct.
Well, talk to me how you got into this and how that you developed your own love for the game of football.
Well, I grew up in a household that was full of sports fans, and my dad was a big fan of the Los Angeles Rams. I grew up in Southern California, so I grew up just loving the Rams, watching them every Sunday. I was a big fan, and that never ended. And even when the Rams moved to St. Louis, which broke my heart, when I arrived in Washington, D.C., I adopted the Baltimore Ravens. But I've always been a football fan, always been a sports fan, but I was a history major in school, too. And so bringing together American history and sports, this was an absolute labor of love working on this book. I had such great time going through the library's collections and pulling together as much as we could to tell the story.
What fascinates you about the history of the game of football?
You know, that's a good question, because at first I thought I would mostly be interested in working on the later history, because that was what I was familiar with. The early history is really interesting to me, because we're finding a lot of similarities. Things that we are talking about today in the game, they were talking about back then. The idea that football was a way to bring together a town, or that a sports team was a way to bring together a university, that was how Americans, you know, did it. Instead of some other form of a cultural entity, it was sports that we used. And so the football is just such an inherently entertaining sport that I thought it was fascinating even in its earliest days.
So many books have been written about the history of football, and as you started to approach this project, how did you decide to write this and put this together and maybe make it a little bit different from some of the other books?
That was a big goal, actually, because there are thousands of books out there on football, and we have them in our collections at the library. You walk down the stacks in our main collections, and it goes for rows and rows and rows of nothing but football books, double stacked. So what I wanted to do as a social and cultural history was not give the definitive list of records and statistics or anything like that. I wanted to look at how football reflected American history and vice versa. And so we look at the impact that World War I and World War II had on the game, and how the game reflected what was going on in those conditions. What was football like during the Depression? How did the civil rights transformation in this country, how did that occur in football? And, for example, the civil rights movement was very different in football than it was in baseball with Jackie Robinson. And so I thought, you know, we're still dealing with things like this. Football was where football stadiums and football games were where Americans after 9/11 had a lot of their memorial ceremonies, because this was a major gathering of people. It was televised. And so that seemed like an obvious place. And so the intersection between American culture and football was the pivot point for me on how I was going to enter this subject.
I'm kind of curious, and I want to get your take on this. Why do you think Americans themselves are so enamored with the game of football? I mean, there's so many other sports out there that they could pick, but football, as we've talked about, really is number one.
There is something inherently entertaining about clashing bodies and throwing and kicking an object around. There is just something in our DNA, I think, that finds this very entertaining, that somehow it pleases us, I guess, to see this sort of thing happen. And I've been asked this question a lot, and I just think it's more than anything specific. I think it's something that's really inherent in us, in that we like seeing this sort of controlled combat, I guess you might say.
What's interesting is that it always seems like what goes around comes around again, and we talked about the safety concerns about the game of football back at the turn of the 20th century, and here we are again now in the year 2013 talking about safety concerns. Much has been made of the concussions that have been related to football and the lawsuits that former NFL players have brought against the league and helmet makers and other individuals and things like that. And again, people are wondering, can football survive into the future? There are those that say that the game doesn't have much of a future because of all the safety concerns, because people are worried about, you know, destroying their bodies or watching someone else be destroyed.
I think what football will have to survive are a couple of things. I think All of the ancillary traditions that surround it, everything from how it's a part of our weekends, it's the centerpiece of American weekends, our tailgating, our halftime performances, all these things that we associate with football are such traditions that we'll want to continue. But the other thing that I think will keep the game alive is football's ability to adapt. One of the things you see throughout the book is that there are these changes that are going on, and I think there will be changes. I think in addition to some of these small rule changes, we might see some other things occurring. It could be anything from changing the type of tackling that is permitted to changing the age at which people can start participating in tackle football to how many games or practices can be permitted. So I think we are going to see some changes. And we'll still continue to be loyal to the sport because that has been our history. Even when football was down on its luck, we have continued to be true to football.
What's amazing to me, and most sports, I mean, the equipment has changed a little bit from time to time. You look at baseball gloves, for instance. I mean, they're a lot different than what they were perhaps around 1890 or 1900 or 1910. But the changes in the equipment in football have been remarkable. And, I mean, they've made better and better equipment, but still we have these safety concerns.
Well, and one of the reasons that's been pointed out by some of the players and some of the experts for that is that even though the helmet might make you personally safer if you're one position, it's actually endangered another player because you're now able to use that helmet as a weapon. And the idea that you think you're invincible in your helmet has allowed players to take chances that normally they would not have if all they had on was a little leather helmet or no helmet at all. And so one of the suggestions that has come up from some players was if you actually removed helmets, and you went to something like how rugby and Australian rules football do not use helmets, people will not be inclined to use their head going after someone. So that's an interesting possibility. Would the game actually be safer if you removed the helmets? And I think that's something that's going to be discussed, as you say, with all of this current conversation going on. What are some of the things we might be able to do with the equipment that could change the impact that it's having?
What's funny is, you know, you've got pictures in your book of this, of games where you see some players wearing helmets and other players are bareheaded.
That's right. There's a mix. Some of them have adopted equipment. Others haven't. Some are in very padded pants. Others are just wearing, regular pants. So there was a real variety in the late 19th and early 20th century as to what you saw out there as players were experimenting. Some of them would wear rubber face masks over their noses. Others did not, and depending on what you were comfortable with. And so that may be something that we revisit, is how armored do we want players to be out there, especially with children. You know, should they be wearing a helmet when those little heads are kind of top-heavy with a helmet? So I think we're going to see a lot in the next year or two of some interesting and possible creative solutions to this issue.
Well, I touched on the photos in your book, and your text is obviously extremely interesting to read, the story of football as you tell it. But at the same time, I really have to get back to this. The photographs in this book are just fascinating, and there's so many pictures in there. And I've read a lot of books about football because I love the game, too. I've seen a lot of pictures, but there's so many in this book I've never seen before.
That was one of our goals, was that on every page that there be something that might be new to people. The library has a number of divisions that we use to find material. The Princeton Photographs Division, for example, has more than 14 million images. These could be everything from news images to posters to postcards to fine art prints. We went to the Geography and Map Division, and we looked at maps that were showing not only how conferences were set up across the country, but how to orient your football stadium so that you took advantage of the best use of sunlight. We went to the Performing Arts Division, and we looked at sheet music for fight songs. We do a whole section on fight songs in the book. I think I read the lyrics to more than 300 songs for this. And so we wanted to find as much as we could that spoke to the American experience in all its different forms and its different media. So you see cartoons, you see memorabilia, you see rare photographs, everything that we could find. You know, we've got a section on the movies. Football is the movies. Football was being filmed as early as the 1890s. And so I watched some early game footage. And then you've also got the history of football in feature film. You know, that's a regular that's been a regular part of our cinema history. So the idea was, let's find as much as we can that shows the American experience through these images.
Well, it sounds like you had a lot of fun with the research.
Oh, my gosh. I had a blast doing this book. It was a great deal of fun.
Again, our guest today on the front page is Susan Rayburn. Her brand-new book is called Football Nation, 400 Years of America's Game. This is from the Library of Congress. And, again, this is a book chock full of great photographs, a great story about the game of football itself, and we'll continue talking with Susan about the book in just a moment here on Front Page.
Mountain Edition is Morehead State Public Radio's most comprehensive local news program. Every weekday afternoon at 4:30, this half-hour magazine presents our longest news and sportscasts, features, and commentary on the news. It's a show that brings you closer to politics, education, the environment, and the arts in the part of the country where you live. That's Mountain Edition, weekday afternoons at 4:30 on Morehead State Public Radio.
Welcome back to today's Front Page. Again, we're talking about the brand-new book, Football Nation, 400 Years of America's Game. Our guest is the author, Susan Rayburn. And Susan, you know, there's all different elements of football, but one of the elements that I've always been interested in is the development of pro football. I know you explore that a great deal. For a long time, people thought that college football was basically the highest level of football and really disdained the idea of pro football.
That's right. Pro football really didn't have a very good reputation when it started. Part of that had to do with the fact that the first paid players were those who were actually playing on what were supposed to be amateur club teams. A lot of cities had club football teams, and in order to ensure success, they would, you know, slip some money under the table to professional athletes. And so the view of the professional was a little tawdry because it was associated with gambling, with game fixing. So college was held to be a more pure form of the sport. So by 1920, when the NFL formed, the idea is that there should be a market for professional football because you've had colleges that have provided all of these excellent players, and yet there's an underworld, a sort of a seamy side of football in the early years. And what makes the change, what really makes the change for pro football, is when Red Grange, who is a superstar at Illinois, agrees to play professionally. And so in 1925, you know, he joins the Chicago Bears. And he brings a real element of respectability. And a lot of players who might have poo-pooed the idea of going into football give it a second thought. But the thing is that it does still take time for football to reach a level of appreciation. Even in the 1930s, during the Great Depression, when you would think everybody who would be very hard up for a job and willing to take any kind of work, even then, in the 1936 college draft, the first draft that the NFL had, most of the players who were drafted did not sign professional contracts. They chose to try to do something else. Here you are at the height of economic despair, and most people are saying, well, I don't think I'll play pro football. I think my chances are better somewhere else. And one of the changes that occurs is that the NFL begins to compete in larger cities. Originally, those teams were playing in much smaller cities, cities like Green Bay, which is one of the few places where a team has remained. They were smaller cities, and they decided to compete head-to-head with other competition by moving to New York and Pittsburgh and Detroit and Philadelphia. And when that happens, suddenly you're able to tap into a much larger fan base, and the NFL begins to gain some ground. But those early years really were rough going. A lot of teams went under. The president of the NFL even said, nobody gets into professional football to make money. You know, you're not going to do that. That's a far cry from what we've seen today.
Well, was it the advent of TV that really exploded the game of football, especially pro football?
It really did for a couple of reasons. First of all, there's the matter of the weather. By the time you get past that glorious fall weather into winter, staying home and watching a game can be a lot more appealing for fans. The other thing was that football was really perfect for television in a literal sense, in that when you looked at your screen, you were able to see everybody at the line of scrimmage. You were able to see everything right in front of you. Baseball has always had a harder time with television. You know, the angles are difficult. You can never really see the whole field of play, but football really perfectly fits the TV screen. And as early as the 1930s, with the first experiments in television, this was something people were noticing, that you could catch the entire game on your screen. And so by the 1950s, that becomes part of the weekend routine, settling in and watching a game. And yes, that makes all the difference in the world.
Well, people talk about the 1958 NFL championship game that went into overtime between the Colts and Giants as really the true birth of pro football in terms of becoming a sport that people became passionate about. Do you agree?
You know, I would, and I did look into that because I was curious as to why this game was given the appellation greatest game ever. And there are a couple of reasons. For one thing, it was a really great game in and of itself. It was a close game, went into the first sudden death, which was exciting. And in fact, a lot of the players didn't even know how the game was going to end. Nobody had ever gone through sudden death before. But the other thing about it that makes it really the greatest game was it was the result of really a perfect storm of circumstances. The game was played in late December, and there was poor weather in large parts of the country. And so people who might not have settled down to a football game that evening did. There really was a captive audience. You know, the weather was kind of conspiring against doing other things. So you had a huge audience, about 45 million Americans tuned into that game, which is about 25% of the American population. That's an amazing figure. And the NFL had never had a stage that big before. And here they have this audience, this huge audience watching, and they put on an incredibly entertaining, suspenseful thriller of a game. And that really did pay off then. It was identified as an instant classic immediately after the game. So, yes, I would agree that for reasons both of influence and of the actual performances of the game, that really was one of the greatest games ever played.
Do you think that football right now is at its zenith, and where can it go from here?
That's a really good question. I think we are at a zenith right now. Now, whether that zenith will then plateau and remain where it is, I think a lot of that is going to hinge on what we as a country decide we're going to do about this issue of head injuries. Is this going to be something that keeps people from allowing their children to enter into football and therefore changing the whole dynamics of college football and eventually pro football? Is this something that we're going to just simply say, you know, these guys are gladiators, they get paid to do this, we're still going to watch it no matter what? I think the country is going to have a national conversation about this, just as we did back in 1905. And depending on how we choose to go, I think the game will continue to sustain its popularity.
Yeah, it doesn't show any signs of slowing down, does it?
No signs that I'm seeing right now, no.
And perhaps Los Angeles gets a team again. I know they're looking for one right now.
Oh, I would love that.
And the Rams apparently aren't as happy with the dome as they used to be, so maybe you get the Rams back.
Oh, if they went back, I would be elated. But I would feel very sorry for St. Louis because I know what it's like to lose a team, and it's a very hard thing. And so I would feel sorry for anybody that has to have that happen.
And it would be the second time for St. Louis that they would lose a team.
Right, no, and that's a great sports town, too. And so that would be unfortunate. No, and one of the things I do talk about in the book is that sense of betrayal that a lot of fans feel when teams move, because you are invested in them often from an early age, and that becomes such a part of your local identity too. And it would be a shame to have them leave, but if they were to go back to Los Angeles, I would be cheering.
Well, how can people get a copy of your book?
It's available in all the usual places, in bookstores and online, and shouldn't have any trouble finding a copy.
And folks, right now I want to tell you, if you're a football fan, this book is a must. It's called Football Nation, 400 Years of America's Game. Susan Rayburn has been our guest today on The Front Page. Susan, thanks so much for spending time with us.
Oh, thank you, Chuck. This was my pleasure.
I'm Chuck Morales, host of Front Page, and we'll see you next time.